Hi, this is Marlena Lieberg welcoming you to Blind Spot. Blind Spot is a series of programs heard this time each week on ACB Radio where we talk no-tech, low-tech kinds of things. If you've got an idea for something you'd like to hear on Blind Spot, why not drop me an email? My email address is Marlena, that's M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A, at acbradio.org. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Blind Spot. This is Marlena Lieberg. The interview that we're going to listen to this week was recorded quite some time ago, actually before the ACB convention, on a very hot Saturday afternoon during Memorial Day weekend. But before we go to that interview, I'd like to take just a moment to thank all of you who have been writing to me, giving me suggestions for programming, giving me support. Even some of you have noticed that the music at the end of most of the shows actually has some significance to something that was in the show or said in the show. Doing Blind Spot has been just a real treat for me. This will be the 13th program. Hopefully that's the lucky 13. And I hope that there will be many, many more programs to come. I want to keep Blind Spot a program that belongs to everyone. So, again, as I say in my intro and outro, if you have anything that you would like to hear on Blind Spot, please feel free to email me. I love receiving the email. It's marlena@acbradio.org. If you have any suggestions for things that I could do better or differently, I'd like to hear those as well. In the interview that we're about to hear, you will find that my guest's audio is a little bit low. Getting the audio levels right and to the place where I want them to be has been an evolving and continues to be an evolving experience. And so because this show was taped long before I figured out how to make things sound at least as well as they do now, this audio will be a little bit low. But I think you can still hear the interview. So, with no further ado, sit back, close your eyes, and think about what you were doing this past Memorial Day weekend. Thanks for listening. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Blind Spot. This is Marlena Lieberg, and this week we have the great fun, I think, of getting to know someone who we all certainly know a bit about politically, but maybe we don't know much about the man behind the office. Paul Edwards, welcome to Blind Spot.
Thank you, and I would love to hide behind offices often.
But we found you.
We did.
And we're not going to let you do that anymore.
Okay.
Before we started our interview, Paul told me that he was doing something of which I am very envious. Paul, would you like to tell our listeners exactly where you are?
Yes,
and what you're doing?
I'm sitting on my patio and dangling my feet into the pool that we have so that it is a very comfortable, sunny 84-degree day in in Miami, and it's a good day to be doing interviews.
And there you are. Well, perhaps you'll give us a splash so that
certainly
those of us oh my goodness, I could see where this interview is headed. Well, I'm sure that everyone knows, of course, Paul is the president of ACB. And when I talked with Paul about doing the interview, I said, you know, I know you've been on ACB radio quite a bit, and it's all been related to ACB. And so I would actually like to talk more about who is Paul Edwards, where you grew up and went to school, and kind of those things that people might not know about you.
Okay. I was born in San Francisco, California, and I spent the first 7 years of my life there, part of the time in public schools and part of the time at the California School for the Blind. And at the age of 7, I moved to Canada because my mother remarried and went to the school part of the time there at a now defunct school called the Jericho Hill School for the Blind, which was a school for the blind in British Columbia, and part of the time at the Athlone School for Boys. And in both cases, I boarded because I actually lived in Calgary, Alberta, which meant that one went back and forth every term by train. And then at 13, I moved to Jamaica. So I then stayed in Jamaica till I was 21 and got my first degree at what was then the University College of the West Indies in history. And then went on to Trinidad to get a degree in international relations and got married to Helen, who I met in Trinidad as a reader, and then went to work teaching high school there for 10 years. In 1976, and by that time I had 3 kids, I moved back to the United States, having in the meantime gotten a second graduate degree in education, and immediately on returning back to this country, I went through kind of rehab center type training and then went to work for the Florida Division of Blind Services as a rehabilitation teacher, and I did that for 4 years, then became a rehab counselor for 3 years, and then moved from Daytona Beach, where I had worked in those jobs, to Jacksonville, where I became the executive director of a private agency for the blind called iLab. In 1985, while I was still in Jacksonville, I ended up being divorced and met Gail, the person who I'm with now, in 1985, in fact, at an ACB convention in Las Vegas. And we got together in 1986 and have been together ever since. And in 1986, I took the job I now have, which is Director of Services to Students with Disabilities at Miami-Dade Community College's North Campus, where we serve about 600 students with disabilities every semester, and which me out of trouble, and I've been there for 14 or 15 years now.
What kinds of differences for a blind person have you noticed in the places that you have lived?
Well, I'd have to say that the United States is certainly the best country in the world for a blind person to live in terms of the rights of blind people. And in terms of the capacity of a blind person who has kind of ability and capacity to get ahead, even Canada, though it's certainly a developed country, has service delivery systems for blind people that I would find very difficult to deal with, I think, some of the time. And I hope my friends in CNIB don't get too mad at me for saying that. But in Canada, as in many other British Commonwealth countries, services to blind people aren't delivered by the government directly, but through a private organization which depends, at least to some degree, on the amount of money that it can raise from appeals to the public. And I think that has some significant impact on the way that services get delivered. In Jamaica and in Trinidad, blind people aren't nearly so far ahead as they are here. I was the first blind person in the Caribbean that I'm aware of to graduate from high school, and the first blind person certainly in the Caribbean to attend university.
I want to ask you how you felt inside being the first blind person to have ever, whatever, graduated from high school or university. How did that feel for Paul Edwards?
Well, it didn't feel like anything for Paul Edwards because he didn't see it that way. When I was doing it, what I was doing was simply surviving. I came from an environment where my mother was a pretty severe alcoholic, and it meant that when I won an open scholarship, that meant for sure that I'd actually be able to go to university. It was a hugely liberating exercise, and I was so busy having fun going to university, and so busy simply enjoying the idea of being in a place where I could do stuff, that the idea of myself as a pioneer simply didn't occur. One was simply doing what one had to do in order to do well. Sure, I had to design the ways that I was going to survive in university. Sure, I had to figure out ways of getting around problems without anybody's help. But that's kind of what I'd expected to do right from square one anyway, because I've always perceived that if blind people are going to succeed, they have to be pretty clear about what they want and push for it, or nobody's going to give it to them.
Absolutely. Could you tell us a little bit about what are some of the things that you like to do in your copious spare
right.
time?
Well, I'm a huge science fiction and fantasy fan. And unfortunately, despite all of my efforts to subvert them and make them do more, NLS doesn't do a lot. So that means that I also am now a fairly copious scanner of science fiction and fantasy. I buy the books and then scan them and then read them. I enjoy listening to both traditional and modern folk music a lot. I'm not very good at music. I kind of play at keyboards in a desultory sort of way. I enjoy audio on the internet, but don't have nearly enough time for it.
Who does?
I certainly made it my business to try to assure that ACB Radio got off the ground, and think that one of the better decisions, I'll learn to speak. That's one of the better decisions that I've made as ACD president, to try to work with Brian and Chris Gray, Brian being Charlton, to make sure that ACB Radio happened and to actively go out to affiliates and try to raise some funds to assure that it continues to happen.
How did you get into this blindness biz? How did you get into the consumer advocacy arena?
Well, it's interesting. I think that any blind person who is socially conscious has to become involved. I don't know how you can avoid it, because there are so many issues that are out there. In the Caribbean, I worked at tutoring some blind people, and in fact, it's sort of interesting because some of those folks have ended up in the States. And when I worked with some of those folks in Trinidad, I had hardly expected that they would end up being members of ACB, but in fact, there are a couple of folks in Philadelphia who I knew in Trinidad who are now ACB members and who still remember, without wanting to throw up, the fact that we worked together in Trinidad. But in the Caribbean, you're in an interesting place where blindness advocacy is concerned. When I was thinking about changing jobs in Trinidad, because you're also in an interesting situation when you're trying to teach history in a newly independent black society when you're a white expatriate history teacher. And one of the job offers that I had was to become the director of what would eventually become the Caribbean Council of the Blind. And my job would have been to go around and encourage the formation of consumer organizations and consumer advocates on the various Caribbean islands. And it would have been a great job, and I would have loved it, and I would have enjoyed it. And I might even have done a good job at it, but I turned the job down because it was my belief that in the Caribbean, there had to be a real authentic Caribbean voice that was speaking for people who were blind, not somebody who was white and expatriate trying to speak. Now, what they ended up doing was hiring a guy from England and bringing him out to the Caribbean for the first couple of years. And then after that, there were capable blind people in the Caribbean who took over the role of being kind of executive director of the Caribbean Council. But I opted not to do that. So I got back to the States still only having been marginally involved in the consumer movement. In the Caribbean, what I tried to do was to interact with the school there as well as what was called the Blind Welfare Association to try to make things better and to try to help blind folks to come to terms with understanding more of what were appropriate demands and what weren't. But it's very difficult in a Caribbean society where services for the blind, for the most part, are workshop services. At least they were then. Things have gotten better now. So a lot of the initial efforts at the formation of consumer organizations had to do with almost unionizing of workshops. And many of the demands that blind folks were making at that point seemed to me to be inappropriate, which is one of the many reasons why I didn't take the job. I thought they were inappropriate because they were speaking with two voices. And it's something that I guess blind people have a tendency to do, whether they're part of the Caribbean or whether they're part of the United States. But the two voices are, one voice is asking for rights that blind people ought legitimately to have, but the other voice is asking for privileges that blind people ought to have. And I think there's a real difficulty when you mix those two things.
And finding that delicate balance of
correct.
What
well,
is...
I'm not sure, for the most part, that blind people ought to be asking for privileges anyway. I think we ought to be asking for full participation, and I think we ought to be asking for the opportunity to be competent, but I don't think we should be selling ourselves short by suggesting that we need special privileges that aren't available to anyone else.
Precisely.
One of the demands that people were making in the Caribbean was to have free telephones and free power. I don't think that's an appropriate thing for blind folks to be asking for. I think we ought to be asking for the opportunity to make enough money that we can afford to pay for our power and our telephone and to not be subjugated by being paid such minimum wages by workshops. Those are perfectly appropriate demands, but I don't think it's right that we should ask for things that we should get simply by reason of our blindness that nobody else gets.
I happen to know that you've traveled fairly extensively in countries that I will probably never see, and probably many of our listeners will never see. I would like to know, where have you gone that has absolutely delighted you the most, and why?
Well, I guess I'd have to say Australia and New Zealand both. When I had not been to New Zealand, I had originally said Australia. But having been to New Zealand in for different reasons, it's just as delightful. Whys are hard. Australia, I loved because it for me embodies many of the great characteristics of what my idealized notion of the United States is all about. That is a society where there is a frontier and where people are looking at becoming individualists. For me, in the United States, we've moved light years behind that now. We're at a place where conformity is very much the order of the day, and where anyone who is a little bit different pays a price for that difference. I think our society makes it very tough on anyone who chooses a lifestyle that isn't easily categorizable and who dares to stand up and be counted as someone who's odd. In Australia, there's a lot more openness, I think, to being nonconformist and being different and being a little odd. And so I loved that. There's also still a kind of a rough frontier-like kind of approach. People love sport. People get very into beer drinking. People enjoy life outdoors to a degree that I guess I don't think our country any longer seems to laud as much as they used to. New Zealand, on the other hand, is a small country, but a country that has an immense range of activities that are available in it and an immense level of options for people to choose in terms of the kind of lifestyle they want. Again, there's a lot of emphasis on outdoors, but in New Zealand, there's also, in a relatively small country, an immense range of cultural activities that are out there, too. By the way, I should say those are there in Australia. They're just not at the forefront of the culture so much as they are in New Zealand. So for different reasons, Australia and New Zealand are places I would sneak off to were I to have a chance, I think.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
I'll probably still be on ACB's board if the next president continues to be out there. I'd like to think that I'll still be doing things for ACB. It is certainly not my intention, once my term as immediate past president of ACB is over, to run for the board again. I don't see my role, therefore, as a leader in ACB. There are a lot of issues that I'm concerned about, and I'll probably continue to be active on those issues. One of the things that I might end up doing is asking whoever the new president is whether perhaps I could represent ACB at the new organization of radio reading services. We are now full members of that organization as radio producers, and I'm hoping that we can have an impact on shaping the future of communications that blind people have access to.
Paul, is there anything that you might like to share with our listeners that I have not asked you, either about Paul Edwards or ACB or a combination of the two?
Well, I suppose that if I were looking at something to add, it would be the immense privilege that I've had of being involved in a civil rights movement for people who are blind and visually impaired. In the 60s, I was a part of lots of demonstrations in Jamaica, and really ever since then, I've been involved in trying to extend people's rights to greater height. I don't know that we're anywhere year being entirely successful or even remotely successful at getting the rights of blind people recognized. And I'm not sure that that's the crucial issue to look at. The crucial issue to look at, I think, is are we as people who are blind taking an active role in beginning to change the way that people look at us and beginning to change the way that we perceive ourselves? For me, having devoted an awful lot of my adult life thinking through lots of these issues, the core value is that I've become a very different person than society would have had me become by a combination of introspection and involvement in the civil rights movement of blind people. And I recommend to anyone who's blind the notion of beginning to think about who they really are by first throwing away every single value that society gave them to start with, starting fresh. The core value for me about being who I am is that the only person I have to be comfortable with is me. And if I'm comfortable with me, the value system that I can produce and that I can operate with gets set by the parameters that I set myself. And if I'm a fairly moral person with a set of values that I adhere to pretty strictly, then I'm going to be a person who I'll end up liking at least some of the time. And that's so important, I think. If ACB and the blindness movement and the civil rights movements in general do anything, it is that they liberate those of us who are a part of them from their stereotypes. And I appreciate that as a value that's been given to me by other people who are involved in the movement, and I recommend that to anyone who's a little uncertain about who they are as a blind person.
Paul Edwards, thank you very much for joining us on Blind Spot.
Thanks very much for having me.
Can we have one more splash?
Sure. Well, I've got to move now. But we can certainly have one more splash.
One more splash.
Yeah, one more splash. I don't have really good marking for the edge of my pool.
Oh, no, there he goes. He's gone. Been listening to Blind Spot on ACB Radio. Thanks to our technical people, Chris Bell, for making the music happen, and Jonathan Mosen for making the program possible. If you have any ideas for something you might like to hear on Blind Spot, drop me an email. It's Marlena, MARLAINA, at acbradio.org.